I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So we said that the Lightning looked like the Lightning the other night. Well, guess what? The Rays look like the Rays again. And in particular, I've been waiting for this guy. Austin Meadows broke out. He's had some good games. I'm not saying that he hasn't. But, you know, his first two at-bats, I think he had a home run and a triple?
Yep, four
RBIs in his first two at-bats. Had a was on it halfway to the cycle and got the two hardest ones out of the way, didn't get there, but Meadows is the one that I think, you know, what was it, 2 years ago he hit 33 home runs or something like that. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that I've been waiting for, and he's been in the middle of the lineup, and I credit Kevin Cash for keeping him there. He's not raised him, lowered him. He's not tried any shenanigans with him. He's the guy that I think has the biggest upside of the ones that have not been consistently hitting. Now, he's had RBIs. I think he leads the team in RBIs by a lot. I don't even think it's close. You know, he's managed to get his runs batted in.
Yeah, he's got 33 of them now after the four today.
Which is really good.
Like, Arozarena has 26. Wendell's got 25. So, I mean, you know, he's leading.
So he's
amount.
In the middle of the lineup. Decent amount leads the team. For a guy that hasn't really consistently hit, he's driven in an amazing amount of runs. I really think that if they get Meadows going in the middle of that lineup, and I don't expect them to just wear it out for the rest of the year, to me, that changes your lineup. Because in this series, especially against Kansas City, I think the first three batters the other night, I don't know that they had a hit, and I think they struck out like eight times. And so they were having trouble setting the table, which is why, you know, credit Kansas City's pitching was very good, but they didn't score any runs. You need the guys, your best players, to be your best players, right? Whether that's a Rosarena, certainly Meadows, Brendan Lau. Those are the guys at the top half of your order, because I think they have a really I think that the lineup is extended now with G-Man Choi, the way Zanino's hitting. I mean, there's some, you know, even Kiermaier had a couple of knocks, you know, the other day. So, it you know, 1-9 now, they're starting to extend that lineup a little bit. And I just think that Meadows is such a big part of this, you know, and he didn't hit in the postseason a year ago, really. I think he had a home run here or there. But for the most part, that's the guy to me that has some upside that we haven't seen. You know what I mean? So this was a good game for him.
Well, I really think that with G-Man Choi being back in the lineup, it really helps Austin Meadows, mm-hmm. particularly when Choi is batting in front of Austin Meadows. Because the one thing we know about G-Man, and Yandy too, in this lineup, they have good at-bats.
They'll take their
walks.
They'll
go deep into counts.
Yeah.
They'll let you see every pitch the pitcher has.
Mm-hmm.
They give you quality at-bats every time. They don't always get on, but they give you quality at-bats. And I think when, you know, Austin Meadows, you know, today he hit behind G-Man Choi in the lineup. When you hit behind guys like that and those guys around you in the lineup, it really helps you. And, mm-hmm. you know, we know Austin's capable of it and the talent. But, you know, it's G-Man, we talked about, lengthens the lineup in that. But it also gives you quality at-bats, takes
you get better
deeper.
Pitches. Yeah. You get better pitches. Because what happens is, and I think this happened in this game, because obviously every time he came up, there was men on. When you've got one or two runners in front of you, listen, they can't walk people all night. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to have to come to you at some point when there's a couple guys on and less than two out. They're going to have to try to throw strikes. And
Toronto
and
tried to walk everybody the other night, and it didn't work out very well. But
that's right. And they have shown that they're capable. But for the most part, you know, that's when you need your table setters. And, you know, for my money, like a Rosarena strikes out way too much to be at the top of the lineup.
But his on base percentage is second on the team. I mean,
yeah, it's not bad. So I mean, he'll take his walks too. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I think he strikes out way too much, but
I think he's up there to get more at bats.
He's up there to see more pitches.
He's also probably their most talented.
He's probably their most potent hitter. Yeah, and that's sort of the little league approach, right? I want my best hitter to get as many at bats as possible. That's why he's up there. But listen, when there's guys on, then Meadows is going to see better pitches, and you know, let's see if he can keep it going. I mean, you really need a guy like that to get hot. Here's what's carrying him, though, and I'm telling you, I'm so impressed with Shane McClanahan. I mean, he goes 5 innings, 63 pitches, could have gone deeper. I'm not sure exactly why they pulled him. Maybe they want to get Michael Walker some work.
I think they were up 7-0. It was we got Walker here. We know we want to limit. Pitch. We're not sure how many innings guys like McClanahan are going to be able to handle this year.
Sure.
That's still the unknown that come to the second half of the year,
right?
How are all these pitchers, and not just the Rays, I mean every team in baseball.
Right, they're going to hit a wall.
How are arms going to hold up? How is this all going to hold up? So if you've got a chance to save a guy,
right?
Yeah, he was dealing today, but you're up 7-0.
Oh, I think it was the right move. Yeah. I was a little surprised because of how efficient he was. I mean, yes. 63 pitches through 5 is not a ton of pitches, right? But again, to your point, I think they're doing just that. They're trying to preserve the innings. Listen, McClanahan, they put up a stat about how many guys have thrown pitches over 100 miles an hour. He's right in the mix of that.
He's second.
Yeah, and I mean, you talk about fastball changeup guy, sinker. Mm-hmm.
Well, his slider. I mean, he added the slider, which is really what changed
the
game
for him. Which has been huge, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, this dude, for as young as he is, for as few starts as he's had, he's got a big-time arm. But more than that, he throws strikes. He's a strike thrower. Like, if you're a hitter, you have to be on your toes for everything, right? Because everything's around the plate. It's mm-hmm. not as if he has non-competitive pitches. You know, some guys have good stuff, but then, you know, they're dirting a ball here or there, or they're two out of the top of the zone. McClanahan, everything starts out in the middle of the plate. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then it just dives. It dives. It rises. But he's around the plate. He's a strike thrower.
Well, he had 47 strikes out of those 63 pitches today.
Yeah, I mean, and you don't see, like, there are some power pitchers that can't do that, mm-hmm. you know, and he's capable of it. I mean, because, I mean, 0-2 is not a good place to be on this guy. He literally can do anything he wants to you. I just find him so hard to hit, and, I mean, again, their pitching has settled down to the point where it is, again, the strength of their team. You know what else is a strength? Their defense. Have you seen better plays in this series than almost, I mean, the last two series? You go back to even the Toronto series, but certainly against Kansas City. They have made some plays in the infield, in the outfield. I mean, it's highlight stuff.
Well, and when you watch the other team, like Mondesi today, a routine grounder.
Yeah.
That he bobbled, took his time, and mm-hmm. then was it Walls running? Yeah, it was Walls running. And then he was going to beat him, and then he spiked it in the dirt.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was a routine play. It's you know, mm-hmm. we see these teams all the time, and we'll get into Javi Baez's play in a minute here. Man. If you haven't seen this one yet, oh, my goodness. Twitter blew up, and any baseball fans, Woo! It was I sent it to a few. I sent it to you.
The Pirates.
Yeah, so, but, the defense in the leagues and that, I mean, the Rays saved so much. And getting back to the pitching, too.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know how many walks the Rays had in this 3-game series against the Royals?
Mm-mm.
They gave up 3.
3 in 3 games.
3 walks. Tyler Glasnow gave up 2, and then McHugh gave up 1 in the 9th today.
And, I mean, McHugh, he finished the game. So you're talking about all the starters, and 2 of those mm-hmm. were from the same starter in Tyler Glasnow. I mean,
Rich
so
Hill
everybody
had, what,
else
13 strikeouts and no walks on Tuesday.
Didn't walk anybody, yeah.
But they gave up 3 walks in the whole series. That's winning baseball.
Well, it's winning baseball, but I got to be honest with you.
Don't give them freebies.
Don't give them freebies, but here's what makes pitchers able to do that. The guys behind them making plays. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They work fast. Rich Hill does, but they work fast. The fielders are into it. You know, they're not falling asleep out there. But you also, as a pitcher, you trust you can pitch to contact. You're not like, hey, I don't know what I got behind me here. Maybe I need to strike everybody out. So these guys are throwing strikes, and they're putting the ball in play, and they're coming up with plays for them. I mean, you know, a couple of great catches in the outfield by Kiermaier in the Rich Hill game. Great turn of a double play in this one. So, listen, I mean, the Rays have always prided themselves on defense. I got to be honest with you. Like, I loved Willy Adames because of the energy that he brought, and he made himself a really good shortstop. I'm not sure this kid that replaced him isn't way better.
Defensively, I think you're right. And offensively, he possibly could be.
I love the way – listen, he's very simple at the plate. He's a switch hitter. He doesn't try to do too much, you know, with the ball. His bat – and I wish I did this when I was playing – he keeps his bat in the zone, right? So, like, if your bat is over the strike zone for a long time, chances are you're going to get a piece of the baseball. He is just he can run. He has energy. He prides himself on defense. He's probably – you know, more of a defensive player even than he is an offensive player. But let me tell you got a switch hitter like that, and you know, that you can play every day against lefties or righties, and he looks equally potent against both. It's really impressive. I mean, this kid's had a hell of a week when you think about coming to the big leagues.
He has. And by the way, for Willy Adames, he had a big 3-run home run today to give the Brewers a lead. Now they end up giving it up.
Did he? Good for him.
Winning in extra innings. But, yeah, he had a 3-run shot. So, look, I figure he's going to win the batting title, the Brewers, because he doesn't have to play at the Trop half the season. So, as we know, that's where he can't bat. Everywhere else he did okay.
You know what? None of them can hit at the Trop. It's the weirdest thing. They're not any good at it.
It really is amazing how they've been that way.
There's such a disparity. Yeah.
You know, but in the past they've been so good at the Trop, not necessarily offensively, but just as a team. And this year they've struggled there. But
yeah. So anyway, we've got the Rays now, you know, beginning a new winning streak after they had won 11 in a row.
Yeah, it's 13 out of 14 now.
Now they got 13 out of 14, two in a row, started a new streak. The Tampa Bay Lightning are waiting to see, as we do this podcast right now, Nashville is up 2-1 on Carolina, so they're trying to extend that series to 7 games.
If Lightning fans, if Nashville wins this game, and by the time you hear this podcast, the outcome will be known. Mm-hmm. Nashville wins, then they go to a game 7 on Saturday.
Right.
Actually, I think they set the time now at 5 o'clock or 5:30, something like that.
Okay.
So at that point, the Lightning wouldn't start their series with the winner of that game until Monday or Tuesday, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
If Carolina ends up coming back and winning this game, then the Lightning could start as early as Saturday.
Right.
Might be Sunday. I'm guessing it's one of those 2 days as far as when they would play the next game. That one would be in Carolina.
Right.
If they do play Nashville, if it goes to Game 7, Nashville wins, Game 1 would be at Amalie Arena, either Monday or Tuesday, presumably.
Right. Now, aside from just wanting, and again, you'll know by the time you hear this podcast if Carolina has won. But aside from wanting to extend the series and get more days off, which I think are critical at this time of year, don't you think that the Tampa Bay matches up better with Nashville than they do Carolina?
I'd rather play Nashville, absolutely. If I'm the Lightning, the Lightning can beat either one of these teams, but
and they're both good. I mean, let's not pretend they're not. They're both in the playoffs, but. I just think that that's a better match. I mean, Carolina won the division. Again, Tampa Bay didn't have Kucherov. They missed Stamkos the last, month or so. So it's a different team. But, I mean, you're definitely, if you're Tampa Bay, you're rooting for Nashville just to get the extra days, which is huge this time. So that's a big deal. So we got, we'll keep an eye on that. And as well as we get your mailbag questions today. Good sample of questions all over the place, which is nice. Some challenging stuff, 100% guaranteed correct answers. So let's get started.
Well, we'll start. We have a couple people either correcting or adding on to some conversations we've had this week. So
sure.
We'll start with Kenny, who says, Rick keeps saying the match was the first and only sporting event going on since the pandemic had started. That's not true. NASCAR had come back on May 17th and was racing on the 24th as well, the day of the match. Just thought I'd let you guys know.
All right. Well, this is where I would normally say that I said sporting event.
Oh.
I know. I can't. Listen, down here in the South, you know, we're all about NASCAR. And I, even though that the cars are the athletes in this particular event, I will grant you that there were some races. They went racing in the South. I guess I was thinking more about, you know, like man-to-man combat. I don't know. I overlooked motorsports. It's on me. I'm not going to get into whether, you know, golf, which...
Well, I double-checked that because then I thought about that. Wait, golf started back too, but they actually started a couple weeks later than that. So it had...
Yeah.
Golf had not started back. It's after Kenny sent the question. I was like, you know what? Let me check golf.
I would love to check the ratings for like what did better, NASCAR or the match. I
think NASCAR did really well like the first week or two, and then it started tailing off as other sports started coming back. And
they went back without fans too, I think, right? They didn't have, or they had very limited fans.
I believe it was without, but this is just going off the top of my head. Maybe it was very limited, but
I'm not sure why I excluded them. It might have been overlooked. Those of you who don't think that NASCAR racing is a sport, then you're welcome to protect me on this. But there's not many of those.
Have you ever been to a NASCAR race?
You know what? Sadly, no. Okay. I have not.
I've been to eight of them.
Eight NASCAR races. I've been to the only race I did was early in my career. I was a correspondent for the Times. They sent me to the 24 hours of Sebring, or 12 hours of Sebring. Mm-hmm. It felt like 24. They sent me to the 12 hours of Sebring. I had no idea what was happening. There was extra drivers in every car. The cars were breaking. They kept sending me like statistics about, you know, what axle broke on this car. I don't know how I wrote a story. I'm sure I did write one. Seriously, I don't know. And it was in Sebring, which is sort of an outpost down in Southwest Florida. And all I know is that when I got there to the track, there was a line of regular people trying to watch this race, but they were all driving Porsches and all the Ferraris and, all the automakers that were in. I said, wow, this is not your typical racing audience, right? Like, these people were all like foreign sports car, devotees. I mean, they were really into it. So that's the only race I have covered.
Okay.
And I have not gone in, and I'm embarrassed to say, having lived here my whole life, I have not been to the Daytona 500 or the Firecracker 400 or anything at Daytona. Mm-hmm. That's on me. It's not that I don't want to go, but I haven't gone. So my day is coming.
So I when I lived in Cincinnati, we carried NASCAR on a radio station, and the Kentucky Speedway had opened up.
Sure.
About an hour south of Cincinnati. And so they had the Truck Series race. They had the sprint car race, but whatever it was below. Back then, right. I mean, it was still the Winston Cup, and then it switched to
the Sprint Cup cars. Yeah,
but whatever. Then I can't remember the next one. It was a Craftsman Truck Series, and then there was the other series. They would have those races. We went to Indy races there, so I would watch, and I was getting into NASCAR and that. And my sister had moved to Charlotte, and I went down to visit her. It was the weekend before Memorial Day, and I drove in, got there like Friday night. We're just hanging out at a bar. What are we going to do this weekend or whatever? And she was new to town, didn't know a lot, and all of a sudden something came on the television about the All-Star race for NASCAR was there that weekend. It's always the weekend before Memorial Day in Charlotte. So we said, well, let's go. And it's cool. You can bring your own cooler full of beer and So we got some coolers, we brought some beer, we bought some tickets and went. And so we're sitting there watching the race. Well, the All-Star race is a little different. It's not like, start your engines, run 200 laps and you're done. They would start, stop, rearrange the order, kick some people out. They were trying new ways to do this, and I'm not a huge NASCAR fan, but we're enjoying it. We're having fun, and the guy next to us is teaching us through this whole thing. Okay, now they're going to do this. They're going to do this. They're going to, now they're going to, the last 10 cars get knocked out of the race, and they're going to rearrange the order. Okay, great. We're having a blast, enjoying it. So at one point, I reach into my cooler, and I think I had Bud Light or something in there, and I saw, I pulled one out, gave one to my sister. Myself, and I offered the guy next to us who was helping us. I said, hey, would you like a beer? He pulled back from me and goes, I'm a Rusty Wallace man. Didn't talk to us the rest of the night because I offered him a Bud Light. And Rusty Wallace drove the Miller Lite car. I wasn't trying to insult your mother or anything.
It's all about loyalty. It's a brand, man. Yeah, I'm a Bud man.
He was nice to us the whole race. Then he wouldn't talk to me the rest of the race. I was like, wow.
I wonder how he felt about M&Ms.
I don't know. I'll never forget that. But
that is crazy.
But I used to go. We used to go every year to visit my sister, and we'd go to the race every year.
The loyalty towards the drivers, though, is really something.
It's
right?
Incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And then I went to Talladega three races, which is awesome to see Talladega.
Well, and that's nothing but a bunch of wrecks, right? I mean, we won't wreck it at Talladega.
Yeah, I mean, that was before restrictor plates. So this was back in, I went 03, 04, that 05, those that
and
time.
Nowadays, man, it's just a pile of them.
No, the best one was, I don't remember which race at Talladega, but late in the race, Dale Earnhardt's leading. and he's God there. And so he's leading the race, and then the late caution comes out. And then Jeff Gordon ends up winning the race.
Oh, no.
Oh. So the beer cans come flying out of the stands.
Rainbow Warrior.
At Jeff Gordon's car as he's trying to do, you know, spinning out and all this stuff. And although I got to credit, he had a great line. So, you know, I mean, the fans are just merciless, you know, just ruthless on him, booing him.
Sure, sure.
Raining beers down on him. And after the race, they asked him about, you know, did you see all those beer cans they were throwing? He goes, oh, I thought those were Pepsi cans. Because he was driving for the Pepsi
car. He was.
I was like, oh, that's pretty good turnaround there.
What I love about NASCAR is, like, you know, if you cover it, and I have not, but, like, when you cover it, so you'll get quotes, but not just from NASCAR, but you get quotes from every sponsor. Like, they all have their own quotes. But I love the guy with the, you know, where they change the caps like 16 times while he's on TV, and then he goes, well, you know, the Pepsi Pepsi car ran good with the Goodyear tires, and you got to give it to, you know, the so-and-so spark plugs. Like, they got to name every sponsor, right?
Oh, and they coach like them, too, man.
Oh, yeah, they do.
And the funny thing is you watch NASCAR, and if they don't mention a sponsor, you're like, that guy messed up.
Yeah, he did.
Like, you notice it.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, it's not the number four car. It's whatever the sponsor is, number four car.
Yes.
You know, so, yeah. Anyway, listen, maybe I misspoke, or maybe I didn't, but it just depends on your perspective. Because some people think that the cars are the athletes. When it's really the drivers. So there's that. But, okay.
All right, Bob wrote us and says, I'm writing on the one thing that you both missed on the golf versus football debate. In golf, God forbid someone clicks a picture or makes a sound while they're swinging. It has to be perfectly quiet and still. Tom Brady's trying to do his thing with 70,000 screaming fans and half of them screaming against him, with guys across him coming at him while he tries to buy enough time to throw the ball. He usually has people all around him. So football is much harder and tougher than golf.
I mean, okay, that is true. You and my father was probably the guy that least understood this, because we would sit there and watch golf on a Sunday with the best of them back in the day, the Jack Nicklaus days, right? And he would always say, I don't get it. He goes, you can't make a sound, really? These guys are standing over a shot, and it's like all these fans are there, and they're being quiet. He goes, you know, he played professional baseball, football, you can scream and yell, every other sport. What is it about these guys? Like, shh, don't, they're going to putt now. You don't want to make a mistake when they putt.
I love it when the announcers that are miles away are,
they're whispering, yeah. They're like they're like in a studio somewhere in a tower, you know, saying he's got about five. Have you ever listened, by the way, have you ever heard golf on radio?
I have. I've carried it.
It's crazy, right? It's so weird. Listen, I can imagine, like, theater of the mind. Like, I can imagine a lot of things. Like, baseball, to me, is great, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can hear the guy, and you know, to me, baseball is the best radio sport. Because, you know, if you listen hard enough, the soundtrack of baseball, mm-hmm. the hum of the stadium, you hear the vendors, you know, going, get your beer.
Well, it has the right pace, too, to allow you to describe slow. Things between. You have enough time to give you that picture and description. Like, you know.
Right.
In a hockey game that's flying up and down, I mean, you know, Dave Mishkin does a great job.
God bless him. He does. He's got.
But all you're getting is what's on the puck, where the puck is. You don't. You're not getting the whole picture of everything. Where baseball, you have time to describe it.
And he never, you know, he can't take a breath. Like, literally, like, it's like, shove to the right point, Stamkos, left point. You know, so they do that. And the thing about, you know, baseball has its pregnant pauses, and it's sort of, you know, but it's like, you know. The wind, the pitch, you know, ball outside. And, oh, by the way, it reminds me. And they tell their stories in between. But you can visualize it. You can hear it. You can hear the crowd. You can hear the vendors, all that stuff. The weirdest thing about the weirdest sport on radio is golf, because you have no theater. Like, standing over a 25-foot putt, it's going to break a little left to right. And now he's going to, he backs off for a second. Now he's going to, lines it up. Okay, and here comes the ball, and it rolls. And it's headed towards the puck, and it is, oh, he just missed it. It is the weirdest thing, because there's a little bit of tension, but you're trying to imagine a ball rolling towards a hole. Like, there's no drama in this, right? Like, did he make it? But it's just so funny to me that, you know, they'll go hole to hole to hole, golfer to golfer to golfer. And, you know, and that's it. Like, you're describing something.
Well, and the dirty secret is they've been calling those golf tournaments from studios for 20 years now.
Yeah.
Where all the other announcers, other sports are doing it now for the first time with COVID.
Right. They've been fooling us forever.
Yeah, golf's been doing it for 20, 30 years. Right.
But they still don't want to talk too loud because the golfers may hear you. It's just funny to me. Where were we? We were talking about, we had a question.
Football's harder than golf. It was more of a comment on our conversation.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, harder, but I would say this. I've never attempted any sport harder than golf.
Well, here's the one thing. It's all you.
It's an individual thing.
You don't have anyone that can bail you out.
No.
You know, Tom makes a bad throw, but a player goes and dives and grabs it.
Right.
You know, or, you know, you get bailed out. Where golf, it's all on you. But granted, you know, no one else can mess you up either. I mean, Tom Brady can throw a perfect pass and
you could drop it.
You know, Chris Godwin can drop it or, you know, pop it up in the air and it gets picked off. And,
right.
You know, so, I mean, you know, it's definitely, you know, there's a big difference of team sport and individual sport, too.
Yeah, no one's taking a run at a golfer, you know, as he's taking a three.
Well, Bruce Koepka says they do, but.
Well, maybe.
The fans.
Yeah, right. That whole thing, by the way, with him and DeChambeau has just gone sideways. We're going to see those guys in a WWE match soon. Again, it's skill versus something else. I don't know. They're different sports for sure. Mm-hmm. But I just know that the hardest thing I've ever tried, like I said, I hit a ball that was moving. It was easier than one that wasn't. I don't know why. I can't describe it. Like, trying to control that low golf ball is so hard to me. And those that play it well and play it at the professional level just, you know, it blows me away. So, yeah, I get what they're saying. You can't make a sound. That's true. Listen, Tom Brady winning a Super Bowl is by far more impressive to me than what Phil Mickelson did. Phil Mickelson has been able to physically hit a golf ball a long way. He had the longest drive in this last tournament, in one of the longest courses in the PGA against 25-year-olds that can hit it a ton. So he's still got game. He's still able to drive the ball like that. But Tom Brady, nobody has done what he's done. Of course, nobody's won a major at 50. I get it. But, you know, you think about the risk of playing football and the hits you take and he took some hits last year. I mean, I can remember some shots that he took down the field where he got destroyed. You know, nobody's running at Phil Mickelson at full speed when he's trying to knock down a 12-footer, you know, and no one's making a sound when he hits it. So I just think that, you know, football to me, like that's the greatest accomplishment. Although what Phil did is, even Phil said a couple days later, he goes, I'm still trying to understand what I just did here. You know, that it's still trying to sink into me. But it's a good question.
All right, we have one more comment based on one of our shows earlier this week, and Craig asked, based on the current conditions now with water and the time of year, what are the best trees or flowers to plant at this time? Also, what mower and depth would you suggest so I don't get those lines in my lawn?
Listen, I mentioned that I am between lawn services, or maybe I didn't, but I am. And I don't mean to turn this into a lawn garden show, but it's a big thing. Like, you cut your own lawn, am I right?
I do, yes.
Because
I've had a couple services throughout the years, and they just don't do as good of a job. So,
and I don't think they would do as good a job as I would, except that I just don't have the time. There's no way that you're going to get me out there, even for a couple hours a day or a week, to push a mower. You know, you could say, well, what if you had a riding mower? Okay, but I look, my lawn isn't so big. I look dumb in a riding mower. So there's a little bit of vanity involved. But to me, lawn service is the best bargain going, right? Like, I'll be happy to tell you guys what I pay. It's $125 a month, no contract. They do everything, hedges, edging, mm-hmm. weeds, you name it. So, and there's a million lawn services in our development. As you know, there's just a lot. It's a busy space, but I hope I didn't like come off as like, you know, killing people that do their own. If you do your own, great. I just find it. It's just hard for me. I don't have the time. Mm-hmm. And now I'm without a guy. So it's, you know, it's something I have to deal with, and I don't need one more thing.
I'm just waiting for the time for my sons to get old enough to do it, so then I don't
have That's why you have sons, right?
That's what my dad told me when I didn't want to do the
Everybody's dad. Everybody's dad gets to that point where he goes, guess what? You're cutting the grass now. And you're like, what? Wait, what? It's like, yeah, this is your job every Saturday or every Sunday or whatever, whenever he did it. And he's like, you've seen me do it, now you're going to do it. And you're like, ah. And there's no money involved. It's just like, no, this, you've taken it over.
Yep.
And that was a rite of passage, right? When you could get behind that mower and push it.
I remember one time complaining about mowing the grass. He said, what do you think I had sons for? Or what I had a son for?
That's right.
Thanks.
That's why that's why you're here. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's, and I, you know, I cut grass for, you know, a summer job. I've done all that. I had lawns and it's hard, dirty work. You know, but the guys that do it around here are great. So if anybody's got a lawn service guy, send them my way, because I am officially, my people have left me. They have they've reduced their work staff, and I think they were coming from too far away. And so I'm my grass is now going to continue to grow until I hire somebody. So, you know, check us out. Hit me up at rstroud@tampabay.com for your lawn service needs. I'm in Lutz, Florida, by the way. So, you know, you might want to, if you're not from this area, you have to pack us some gas to get up here.
All right, we'll transition from Landscape Tampa Bay back to Sports Day Tampa Bay. And Matt had asked, how big has Ross Colton been for the Lightning this postseason compared to the subpar performance of Matthew Joseph? Seems as though Colton is playing the part Anthony Cirelli had a few years ago in the playoffs and has added a needed spark to his line.
First of all, Ross Colton should be forever known as Ross Golton after the way he came on as a scorer early in this season. And he is, without a doubt, the favorite of my two daughters, and predominantly not because of his play, but because of his looks. Okay, fair enough. We got that out of the way. To me, Colton is even more effective now because of Barclay Goodrow coming back and putting him now on that fourth line. That fourth line is wicked good. And I don't know. I mean, this kid has earned it. He started scoring from the time he got here, and there weren't just any goals. There were big goals. He always seems to be in the right place. It's, you know, he's one of those guys where they say, well, the puck finds his stick. No, he puts himself in positions to impact the game. I think he's one of their best players and best young players for sure. So, I mean, what do you make of him, Steve? I think the guy's a big factor, and I don't know that you would play anybody else in his place right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would disagree on Matt's premise of the subpar performance of Matthew Joseph. I think he's had a good season. Right. I think Ross Colton has provided a spark, though, definitely. And
yeah,
I'm definitely leaving Ross Colton in over Matthew Joseph at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That fourth line this year was supposed to basically be Mitchell Stevens, Matthew Joseph, and Pat Maroon.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially how the fourth line was supposed to be going into the season.
Right.
Mitchell Stevens played, you know, early, then got hurt. Since he's played, I think, two games since he came back from injury, but he can't find his way back in the lineup. Presumably, most likely because Ross Colton, the way he's played.
Right.
That fourth line is a different line when he's centering it. Matthew Joseph's done fine. Tyler Johnson looked really good the other night.
He did.
With,
he was
with
fast.
Ross Colton
had,
on that
had the
line.
Assist
yeah.
on with yeah.
That's the best Tyler Johnson's looked in a while.
It is.
You know, that line, when Ross Colton's on that line, it jumps out at you.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Maroon has talked about it many times this season.
Right.
He's a very responsible player, Colton. He knows he's in the right spot.
Mm-hmm.
He'll go to the dirty areas. He'll do those kind of things. And it just
right.
When Barclay Goodrow came back for game six, it now gave you four potential offensive scoring lines.
Right.
And they scored the first goal for them. You know, Tyler Johnson beats the ice
Pat
and
Maroon,
gets it to Pat
yeah.
Maroon.
Right.
You know, the fourth line, the Lightning had become a three-line team in this playoffs with Goodrow out.
Mm-hmm.
They just, that fourth line wasn't doing, and sometimes they only had, it was only Johnson and Maroon, and they double shift guys on those lines. Other times Joseph was in there. They weren't bad, but they were nothing in the offensive zone. And,
right.
And all of a sudden Ross Colton comes on the line and it looks a lot better. And it had all season when he was on that line.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ross Colton's been a huge find. I mean, I don't know exactly what the organization thought this guy would do when he got called up, and you never know. You know, I mean, Alex Barry-Boulet was called up this year, and there's been others. But Ross Colton just, you know, from the minute he got up here, jumped off the page. Jumped off. I mean, you noticed him on the ice and doing good things and being in the right spot and doing things the right way.
Well, he had huge goals.
Right.
I mean,
right
off the beginning, he won games with those goals. Yeah.
But he's also very responsible defensively.
Defensively,
too.
Right.
You know,
right.
Which is what keeps your time on the ice. I mean,
that's
the big
right.
goals are nice, but the coaches, you play good, responsible defense, and you're going to stay out there a lot longer, which is why they can't take him out of the lineup at this point.
Right. Right. good-looking young player, and I think he's helped them. So I feel, you know, you feel for Matthew Joseph, who also had a good year, but you can only get so many guys on the ice. Mm-hmm. And with, you know, Kucherov coming back, Stamkos back now, you know, well, somebody's got to sit down.
I mean, if you make a long playoff run, you're going to have more injuries come up. You're going to have guys miss games here and there.
Joseph will be back. Yeah,
yeah. Joseph's, you know, this is nothing against Joseph. It's just Ross Colton's been really, really good.
Yeah, I think even Joseph would tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, you're comfortable putting Matthew Joseph in that lineup, and I think he's had a good year. And I think he's taken significant steps this year compared to where he was last year and previously.
Right.
And good on him for that. I mean, he's been very good this year.
Mm-hmm.
All right, John asked, crystal ball question inspired by your comments about now being an amazing time for local teams. Can you talk about each one's window for success and how long the Bucks, Lightning, and Rays can realistically stay at these plateaus, barring injuries or acts of God, of course?
Well, looking to my crystal ball, the Bucks window would seem to me to be the smallest, and that is predominantly because of who their quarterback is. They have no – listen, I like Kyle Trask like the last guy, okay? And maybe he'll ascend to the point where he is their franchise guy for years and years to come. Here's the problem with rookie quarterbacks, particularly those drafted almost in the third round. He's the bottom of the second round guy. Is that if he doesn't play for a couple of years, let's say Brady plays this year and next year, then you really only got 2 years to figure out what he is before you have to commit to him. And that's what's going on around the NFL right now. Teams are drafting quarterbacks early in the first round or in the first round, and they get about 2 years into it, and they go, we're about a year or two from having to decide that if we want to go with this guy, we're going to have to hand him just an incredible amount of money. And so that's why you're seeing teams part with their young stars, young quarterbacks after about 2 years. So, I mean, I think the window is small because I can't tell you who's going to replace Tom Brady. If it's Kyle Trask, more power to him. I don't know, just watching him now, if he's going to be as successful, and I can't tell you who's going to be around him. This is a weird team. It's a mix between veteran and young player for sure, but their young players, even some of their young stars, are going to be coming up for free agency in the next year or two, and I think that they're going to have hard decisions to make. So I think the Bucks window is small. The Lightning window, as long as Andrei Vasilevskiy's on the ice and some of the young guys I've seen, of course, you'd love to have Cooch and to some degree Stamkos. I think the Lightning's window is bigger than the Bucks. And the Rays, I don't see it closing. I mean, the Rays reinvent themselves all the time.
I think the Rays have the biggest window. And they have the largest. Because their farm system is loaded.
Yeah, I mean, they do it with not just 25 players, but with 45. So, you know, as great of prospects as they have and their ability to draft and develop, I mean, they could win for many, many years, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I think they have the biggest window because they have the biggest pool of prospects. They have the biggest depth in their organization. The Lightning's going to be interesting because the cap is not going up next year. It didn't go up this year. Presumably, you're not going to have somebody go on LTIR like Cooch and save you a ton of money off the salary cap.
And players, yeah.
They've got free agents of guys like Barclay Goodrow, Blake Coleman. You've got expansion draft coming up, so you're going to lose a player there. You get to protect the 8 to 9 players, depending on. The roster is going to look a lot different because they've got to shed some salary next year. You know, presumably, you'd like to keep one of Goodrow or Coleman. I don't think you can keep both. Because they're going to get enough money elsewhere to where you're not going to be able to keep both. You know, I mean, your core of Kucherov and Point and Hedman and Sergachev and Chernak and Sorelli, you're going to be there.
Yeah.
But, you know, the guys like Palat, Killorn, Gord, Johnson, maybe even McDonough,
those are big names,
you're going to have to shed some contracts at some point.
Yeah.
And some of them are harder to shed than others based on no move or trade clauses, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But their window is still there. But the roster, for the first time this offseason, I think is going to have the biggest change it's had in 7, 8, 9 years.
Mm.
As far as, you know, number of guys are going to be different. Now, your hope is guys like Ross Colton continue to develop and Alex Barry-Boulay and maybe sure. Daniel Walcott, and you've got, you know, some of these young guys that the Lightning's farm system isn't as deep as it used to be. I mean, there was a couple years there it was like the Rays. It was one of the best in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
But years of drafting late first, if they even have first round picks, they've traded a lot of them recently. Their farm system's not as stocked as it used to be as far as the amount of depth. Now, do they have good players? Yes. And some of them are going to become good NHLers? Yes. But I, you know, they're still in their window because guys like Point and Cirelli and those guys are in their prime. Vasilevsky, particularly. They're in their prime.
Especially him, yeah.
So their window's there. But yeah. It's going to be a different looking roster come starting next season. And there's going to be tough mm-hmm. decisions of, you know, which players are you moving or getting rid of. And, you know, some of it's going to come down to money. Some of it's going to come down to what you can get for them, too. You know, mm-hmm. for which ones you know, we thought Tyler Johnson wasn't going to be on the roster this season. Or maybe Alex Killorn wasn't. Well, because of Kucherov's being on LTIR, they were able to keep both of them. They did have to get rid of Cedric Paquette and Braden Coburn, and they had to shed a couple salaries to keep the team together. But next year it's going to be a bigger move to move more salaries, because initially when you looked at going into next season, some of those salaries were already going to be gone. Because of Kucherov's injury, it didn't happen. So I think they're still in their window, but it's going to look different.
So we're going to go Bucks, Lightning, and Rays from the smallest to the biggest window, right?
I think so.
So, yeah, I think that makes sense.
Now, you know, the Bucks have, I mean, they've done really well in drafting the last few years. If they can, whenever Brady decides he's done, are they able to sign a free agent quarterback? That can definitely extend that window.
Kyle Trask, baby.
Well, or Kyle Trask, but I mean, maybe let's say Brady goes a year or two and then Aaron Rodgers available. Or,
there you go. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that definitely, in football, that quarterback can extend things, just much like in hockey, Vasilevsky can extend things.
Well, and listen, they've won two Super Bowls, both with free agent quarterbacks. It's not an accident. They're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Glazers are paying attention. Like, why do we want to go through the rigors of drafting and developing a guy like Jameis and going through all those growing pains? Let's find a guy who can play and try to get him down here to Tampa, and I think that's the route they're going to go.
Yep. All right, let's see. Let's go to John here. He asked, while the Bucks are expected to be in the hunt to repeat this season, what if the worst possible thing happens on the field, a Brady regression or injury? A Gabbert or Trask-led offense would be much different. So would the Bucks be playoff contenders without Brady?
Depends on for how long. If you're talking about a few games, yes. If you're talking about a season or half a season, something like that, no. I don't think Blaine Gabbert's going to take this team to the postseason unless, you know, there were an awful lot of wins already in the books. I mean, you got to hope that Brady stays healthy. I mean, Gabbert is a quality backup. He's won. I think he's 4-4 with Bruce Arians in the past. So Arians has a lot of confidence in him. And we saw him come into, what, the Atlanta game or one of the games last year and actually play pretty well in spots. I think he's ready to play if he needs to, but you're not a playoff team if you have to spend a lot of weeks with Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. Mm-hmm. That's just my opinion. I could, and I'm not trying to undersell Blaine because I know he's worked really hard, and this is probably the best team he's ever been on. So there's that. I just don't think it's going to happen without Brady.
Yeah, the one thing I will give the Bucks credit is their defense is good.
It is good.
And so that can help.
Sure.
If you need to go a few weeks with a backup quarterback,
sure,
because they can keep you in games even if the quarterback's not that effective.
Right. Well, you know what they say about backup quarterbacks. Like, if you have a good one, right? If you need to win one game, he can win one game. If you need to win three games, he's going to win one game.
Mm-hmm.
And like, literally, like, you're happy with those results. Like, you didn't lose them all, so he did his job. And that's sort of the job of the backup quarterback. Like, just keep us afloat. Try to get us, you know, keep us in the win column a week out of two or three. So that's what you're hoping for anyway.
All right, we had a couple questions from, I'll kind of combine them, but Michael and Mike, not the same people, but...
Mike and Mike.
Yes. What do you make of the latest accusations against Stu Sternberg, and why would Mayor Kreisman call for him to step down? And then Mike followed up, is the lawsuit against Stu serious, and could he lose control of the team?
Well, listen, accusations can be made against anybody, mm-hmm. I would say. And so I would be very careful. You can also file a lawsuit against anyone for anything as so long as you have the money and you want to go down to the courthouse and do it. So having said all that, the problem with lawsuits are if they're not thrown out of court on their merit, they lead to discovery. Discovery leads to maybe finding out what the finances truly are. So this is a serious situation from the standpoint that, you know, if you're Sue Sternberg, you don't want to be put in a position of having to go to court for anything, you know. Certainly nothing that can cause your partner suing you. It's optically, it's a bad look. And then there's, you know, if it gets to court, there's going to be some transparency. We've read, you know, figures of money that they've had in the past of $400 million and things like that. Who knows? But that's a good reason why baseball owners try not to get sued, quite frankly, is they have no desire, you know, to turn that over. So I would say any lawsuit is serious, but I can't begin to judge whether it's frivolous or has a basis of fact or what. It's an awful lot of money. And as far as Christman goes, I think what he was saying, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, is that, you know, until this matter is settled, I'm not sure who I should negotiate with. It probably shouldn't be Sternberg. But Christman doesn't know the outcome of this, and none of us do.
Well, and by the time the outcome comes, Christman's not going to be mayor anymore.
He's not going to be mayor, right. So he's not going to be the guy that makes a deal with any owner of the Tampa Bay Rays, whether it's Sternberg or somebody else, because he's on his way out the door. So I think this is politics, unfortunately. And if not, he's just being naive, but more likely it's politics.
Yeah, I think it all depends. You know, the question is, are any of these allegations true?
And, well, we don't know. Yeah, and there's no way you could know that. No. I mean, just simply because a minority owner or owners sue you doesn't mean that they're true. You would like to think that they wouldn't just spend money on frivolous lawsuits, but, mm-hmm. you know, Sternberg has maintained that everything's on the up and up, and you know, until a judge says you got to turn over information, and maybe that's what they're after. I don't know.
Well, for instance, in one of the first things that came out of this was, you know, Stu was talking to Montreal back in 2014, and you know, it was like he can't do that. Well, he can talk, sure, especially if it didn't have anything to do with anything before 2028. There's nothing wrong. I mean, you can make that accusation. He was talking to them back then. Doesn't mean he did anything wrong.
Right.
I mean, if he was trying to talk about moving the team there in 2021 when there's still a lease with the Tropicana Field, that would be a problem. Mm-hmm. But if he's talking to them and it's all about 2028 in the future beyond that, there was nothing wrong there. So, I mean, you can make that allegation he was talking to them before then, but it doesn't mean anything was done wrong. I mean, you know.
Well, where's your proof? Like, were you mm-hmm. privy to the conversation? Is there a printout right. of this? Did somebody right. write it down or transcribe it? Like, you know, even if you think that occurred, I'd be interested to know mm-hmm. just what documentation they have about it.
Well, like I said, you know, what are the details of it? I mean, the right. details matter in that regard.
Absolutely.
You know, saying that he was talking to Montreal back in 2014 before anyone knew it sounds bad, and it can get. Yeah. people upset, but
what's the context, you know?
But I don't know if he did anything wrong or anything that you would view as egregious. I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I who knows? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And I think, you know, it's going to take more time and discovery and some things like that before we know how serious this is. I mean, lose control of the team, I highly doubt that.
No,
baseball is not one to do those kind of things,
right?
You know, unless there's a lot more stuff there that we haven't heard yet, or, you know, discovery shows a bunch of things. I mean, who knows? I mean,
right.
It's hard to predict the future on these things, but.
Yeah. So I hate to get ahead of lawsuits because everyone can file one. And I think you have to be really careful. I do think that the city of St. Petersburg and everybody would like this to advance to the stage where they could look at their books. I mean, that's natural, right? You'd like to know how much money they really are good for. I think we'd all be surprised, but. I'm not going to declare Stuart Sternberg in trouble or guilty or anything else just because people filed a lawsuit. I'm just not.
Brian asks, with the trade of Willie Adames for pitching depth, do you see any foreseeable needs or potential trading one of our outfielders?
Wow. I haven't thought about it. I mean, the guy you'd like to deal with is Kevin Kiermaier.
I think he's the next to go.
I mean, with that salary. Yeah, with that salary, you may have to eat some of it. You may have to pay half of it. I don't know how this is going to go. But to me, they have a sufficient amount of outfielders now that can all track the ball really, really well. Most of them are better hitters than Kiermaier. We know what Kiermaier is. So, yeah, I do think that he's probably, if you could just throw a dart, I mean, he's probably the guy that you'd want to deal if you can, I would think.
Yeah, I would think, you know, as far as the position players, he might be the next one to go. And it may not happen this year. It may be next season or off season, or maybe it doesn't happen because it also takes two to tango. You have to have someone who wants to pick up Kevin Kiermaier.
To that point, do you think there's a market for him? Do you think that there would be more than one team that would say, oh, no, I want him? Oh, no, no, I want him.
At his current salary, I don't know. Want him? Yes. I absolutely believe, you know, he's a good ball player. He saves runs in the outfield.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, if you've got a team that's got a lot of offense but is deficient on defense, could he help you significantly? Yes.
Yes.
At his salary, I don't know who wants to pick that up as far as that much for a guy that has potential to hit but hasn't figured out how to do it consistently enough.
Mm-hmm. Hurt a lot.
Well, the injury part too, but I just look at his at-bats and it just looks like he doesn't always have a plan when he goes up there, or it's, you know, understanding the situation. You know, sometimes you just need to get on base. Other times you can swing for the fences, knowing which one to do at which time.
Right.
Sometimes it seems like he's doing the opposite.
Not a lot of instincts, either at the plate or on the bases. It's weird, but it's true. But he is one hell of a defensive player. I can't deny that, man.
I was just looking at the two catches he made Tuesday night. The one back in Boston Meadows and then the one, you know, against the wall.
You know what part of it is? The guy has no fear. And when I say this, like, I have played baseball with a lot of different people. You know who he reminds me of? And it's true that he's a football player who plays baseball. There is something different about those guys, man.
He'll go across the middle. He's a receiver that'll go across the middle and doesn't care if he
doesn't mind the contact. Right. Yeah. You can't sit there and go, why is this guy, like, he's a little different. Yeah, he is. He's a football player. He played football in high school. Thought he was going to go, I think, on a scholarship to Purdue or someplace. Maybe that was for baseball, but I know he played football. And he has no fear. I mean, you can't have fear when you run into walls like this guy does trying to make catches. I mean, that's the difference, right? Most of us would go, whoa, 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 this one's going to either go over or hit the wall. I'm going to back off now because I'm nearing the warning track, and I've got to put the brakes on here because I'm going to hit a wall. Kevin Kiermaier doesn't care. I'm just here to tell you. And that's why he's injured all the time. His body, he sacrifices. He enjoys that. He enjoys that part of the game. And he's just different, man. Like, he's wired different. I admire his defense. Not so much his offense.
I hadn't thought about the football analogy, but it's actually a really good one.
I play with guys like it. That's why. You know who was like that? This will be a name that everybody knows. Jim Leavitt. Mm-hmm. Jim Leavitt was one of the best baseball players I ever saw. And he was a quarterback at Dixie Hollins High School. Football player his whole life. Football was his sport. But he played baseball, and he played it so well that when he got a scholarship to Missouri in football as a safety, and he was an all Big Ten safety, or at that time Big Eight, not Big Ten, Big Eight safety, he also led Missouri in hitting, and I think he led the conference in hitting. And I watched this guy play center field, and he played it like Kiermaier. He would run into – there wasn't a wall he wouldn't run into. There wasn't a ball he wouldn't dive for and sell out 100% for. He just played – different. You know what I mean? The physical contact, the risk taking. He wasn't risk averse. He was 100% all in every day, all day. And that's why he was so talented at both sports. But football player, like I've seen guys in youth ball, and we can point him out, like, yeah, dude right there, he's a little different. Yeah, football player. That's my theory. I just think that he brings that sort of, I'll run through, you know, you ever say, we'll run through a wall for you. Yeah, Kiermaier will. He will, because he's not afraid. He's not afraid of getting hurt.
All right, Matt asks, how many wins does Jeff Scott need this year to convince the Bulls fans he's moving the team in the right direction?
What, do you have one last year?
That's correct.
So two would be the right direction. Let's say it's got to be more than two. I would say try to win half of them. Try to go 500, you know. Young team, first full recruiting class without COVID, all of that. Tough sell over there at USF right now. Try to win. Try to go 500. That should be your goal. I mean, you want to win them all, obviously, and I'm not saying that it won't, but, you know, don't lose more than you win. And if that's, you know, however, if that's 6-6 or however many games they play, whatever that medium line is, just get there. Just get half of them.
I think the number of wins is less important than how they play.
How they play.
And
right,
the reason I say that is, okay, so two of their first three games, or is it their first two games, are NC State and Florida. I don't expect them to win either of those two games. They're at NC State and Florida here at Raymond James Stadium.
If you gave Florida all they could handle.
But that's what I'm saying is, how are you playing? I mean, like I said, I don't expect them to beat NC State or Florida. You know, but you need to show that you can. You've got players that can play with the big boys, and you can make some plays in those games.
Yep.
The AAC is a tough conference. It's not Power Five, but it's definitely the sixth conference. You've got teams like UCF and Cincinnati on your schedule this year. I think Tulsa's on there too. I was just looking at the schedule the other day, but you know, you've got a lot of tough games on the schedule. I think you got to win some conference games for sure. But I think the cupboard was pretty bare when Jeff Scott took over. He's got to figure out who his quarterback is. He's got a couple young guys. I was at the spring game. A couple of those young guys are going to be something. I don't know if they're going to start this year. But you know, it's going to be how they play, but also how they improve throughout the year too.
Right.
You know, this is his first full season of having a spring practice. Of having a full fall practice. And now you're going through a kind of a normal schedule. You didn't get that in his first year.
No.
So it's, you know, how is the improvements coming from spring practice through fall practice through the season? Knowing that your first two games are against Power Five schools. Most likely you're going to start 0-2. Maybe you pull an upset, but realistically they're not going to be favored in either one of those two games. So,
no.
You know, after those games, then how do you go through your conference season at that point? And how are you progressing and improving and seeing that, you know, and
tough.
Staying it's going to be a tough season. I think next year's the year you can really judge Jeff Scott.
Okay.
But I think you've got to see progress throughout this season and improvements. And you know, once they figure out who their quarterback is, I think things become a little clearer.
A little more clear.
Because the other way is, you know, some of these young guys are more of a more mobile type quarterbacks that can really move out of the pocket and run the run game, where the older quarterbacks in the roster are more of those pocket passer types. You know, so it kind of determines which way your offense is going to go based on who your quarterback is too. So that's a part of this as well, is figuring out, you know, which direction you're going to go this year and who's the best quarterback to lead this team.
Right. No, listen, I like Jeff Scott. I think he's going to be a good coach.
Mm-hmm.
I think he needs time. Obviously, recruiting is the big thing, but even if he gets those players, they're going to need a couple of years to get under his system and get going. So I'm not giving up on Jeff Scott. I mean, look, the worst time you could take over a team was last year, period.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Norvell's going through it. A lot of teams are going through it. So let's give Jeff the benefit of the doubt. And if he finds a quarterback, which is the key to everything in football, they're going to be competitive and very competitive soon. So big year for him, but I don't think it's do or die.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Casey asked, why don't Major League Baseball umpires use microphones to explain rulings to fans in the stadium and on the television? NFL and NHL do this. Major League Baseball, they only give the explanation to the team managers.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, to me, that's more of a how do we communicate to our fans thing. Like, are we going to go with a booth umpire, which is, you know, the NFL has sort of gone to? You know, what's the review play system? It's fun to listen to if you get to hear it, but I don't have a great reason, to be honest with you. I don't.
Well, it annoys me about the NHL, and they're mic'd up, and for, you know, most part, number 93 on whatever team, 2 minutes cross checking. But when you get the melee and there's four people in the box, they don't tell you a thing. I'm like, you know, it that annoys me. I mean, the NFL makes the umpires tell everything. I wish the NHL would do that, and I would love to see the Major League Baseball umpires do that for weird situations.
Yeah.
You know, it's about, you know, there's nothing worse than you're at the arena or, you know, you're trying to figure out what happened. What's going on? Why did Tampa Bay get a power play, or why are they on the penalty kill, or you know, why is that runner on second base? You know.
Yep. Purely transparency. I mean, that's it. You know.
Yeah, I think it would help things if they do that. But it's, you know, look, it's the same reason why in pretty much all the sports is, you know, with replay. Well, we want replay to get the play right. But you can't review this, or this.
That's right.
Okay, well, you know, what's the real goal of replay?
John Gruden used to say this, is like, you know, if your goal is to get the game right, like if that's your goal, why you do replay, because this is a catch, this isn't a catch, you know, this is where the ball should be, this is holding, whatever. If your goal was to really get the game right, and it would last 6.5 hours, then everything should be reviewable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like this dude over here just called holding on 3rd and 4, and we picked up the first down, and we could have 4 more plays, 16 more plays. Like, why are we deciding not to review penalties? Because we know officials make mistakes all the time, you know, and yet they don't do it. So the review system has a long way to go, in my opinion.
Well, what I can't stand, and this is in all the leagues, is the play happens. Okay, hold on. Hold on, we're checking the monitors. Let me call back to the video. Hold on. We're still checking. We're not ready yet. No. Hold on. What?
Eventually.
You need more time still? Hold on. What? You need to call it immediately. I mean, the whole point of replay, to me, replay isn't to overturn the play that 1/30th of a second difference between touching the plate or you know, the bag or not was in or out. To me, it's the one that, you know, the guy was a foot off the bag.
Right.
And, you know, you called him out and he never even touched the bag.
Did he tag him? Did he not tag him?
Yeah. You know, not the, you know, okay, did it brush the jersey just one video frame, which is either 1/30th or 1/60th of a second sooner or not. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that's not what replay's for. It's to overturn the egregious problems. I mean, you know, which, to be honest, doesn't happen very often in a game.
No.
I mean, you know, the refs and umpires and the officials in these leagues are really good. I mean, we get to see things in ultra HD slow-mo and go, oh, well, you know, 2/30ths of a second sooner he actually touched them, not that.
Right. They're the best of the best. Having said that, I think they let a lot of things go in the postseason that they may not call.
Well,
they may call in the
regular season. That's a very different thing, yes.
Yeah, that's a different time, different subject, but interesting. Great questions. Any more?
Yeah, Casey asked another one. He said, why doesn't Kevin Cash wear his jersey at the games? But here's my question. Why do baseball managers wear jerseys?
Well, do we want to see... And Kevin's a young man, but do we want to see guys in their 60s pulling on, you know?
I mean, Joe Maddon still wears the metal spikes, which I think is ridiculous, but Bobby Cox used to do the same thing, too.
Love the metal spikes. You don't remember metal spikes.
Yeah,
I do.
Well, but as a manager, you don't need those.
Took out Howard Johnson one time with them. No, you don't need a uniform. There's nothing. You know what? I've always thought of, like, what if other sports were like baseball? I mean, what if, like, Andy Reid and seriously, Andy Reid and Bruce Arians had to, like, throw on some pads?
I don't need to see Stan Van Gundy in a basketball uniform.
Yeah, right? Like, hey, put the tank off. No, put it back. All of a sudden, you know, he's Ron Jeremy. No, I just, listen, I think it's silly. I've always thought it was silly that baseball managers wear the uniform, especially when they're older and don't look good in them.
I don't know. You think the hockey sweaters would look good on John Cooper, you know, on the bench? Or
maybe. I mean, if it's a sweater, but I don't want to see him on the ice. I know that. I don't. It's just so weird. Like, baseball, is that's the sport, right?
I mean,
it
was one thing if you're a Pete Rose and you were a player manager, and that's happened in history before.
Yeah, okay. if you're going to grab a bat or a ball and go up there and swing it, then that's fine. But if you're not, I don't see it. I don't get it. I don't. Other than, hey, that guy's in charge. He's the boss. See, he's not wearing.
Why does a manager need a number? I mean, they all have numbers too.
It's a good point too. I mean, we know he's the manager. Does anybody else that looks like this guy? You're afraid
he's going to sneak in the game, and you know, no one notices.
There's some young managers, though. I mean, there are some young ones, but you know, the heck with it. Yeah, those are all fair points. I'm not sure. Yeah, Kevin Cash, we'll have to ask him that question. I think we should probably come up to him and say, hey, you know, they want you to put your jersey on. I don't know. Do you know his number? Do you know Kevin Cash's number? I don't.
Off I know Joe Madden was 70.
Joe was 70, and he wore his
Cash
a lot.
16? Is Kevin Cash 16?
Sounds about right.
I think that was his playing number. I think at one point.
Yeah. I don't know.
Let me see if they have it on.
It's odd. It's an odd stat for sure.
Coaches. Do they have their numbers on here? Kevin Cash is 16. I was right.
16.
Matt Quatrero's 33. Matola's 51. Kyle Snyder's 23.
Wow.
Ozzie Timmons is 30. Rodney Linares 27. So just in case you really wanted to know this stuff. Stan Borowski's 41.
That's helpful to somebody, but not to me. But
Paul Hoover, the minor league field or major league field coordinator, is 24. You know.
Nice.
The process and analytics coach has a number. He's 97, Jonathan Ehrlichman.
Wait a minute. He's 97?
That's his number.
Ehrlichman?
Yeah.
Was that the guy with the Pentagon Papers?
He's the process and analytics coach, so, you know.
Gotcha.
The numbers guy.
Gotcha, man.
Numbers guy. Why don't the trainers wear the jerseys then? If everyone else in the dugout does, why aren't the trainers?
Listen, man, baseball finally decided that they let their managers and their bench people take off their mask. Let's start there. But there's no way that anybody nobody over the age of 40 should wear a uniform, even if you're on the team. Because, you know, even though guys are rocked up and stuff, it's just weird to me, man. Unless you're at fantasy camp.
You're at the fantasy camp as a
60-year-old. Sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, whatever. But like, really? Like, these guys had glory days and maybe they want to put the uniform on again, but I would never, I don't think I would want to be, you know, it's just weird. It's always been weird to me. I never understood it. You know, my dad managed, he coached third base in a uniform. I thought it was the weirdest thing in the world, but that's what they did.
We'll end with this, and Vince had asked, when you travel out of town for an event, how do you spend your time? Is it 100% devoted to the event, or do you become part of a part-time tourist? And how do the players spend their time at away games?
Well, the players are very busy. They usually have about a three-hour window after dinner and before snacks and lights out.
Yeah, I think football is different than some of the other sports.
Yeah, it is. And you know, although people have to come to that city, they have to, you know, make a point to the hotel, and there's a lot of coordination. With COVID, nobody saw anybody. No families went.
Right.
They didn't meet them in hotels. They couldn't do anything if they did. How I spend most of my time is doing the New York Times crossword. No, that's not what I do.
You do this podcast. That's what you do.
Yeah, I do this podcast. I have done, it's age-based. Like when in my younger, wilder days, we might go out and have dinner and a beverage or two. Now it's just like, how fast can we have dinner and go back and go to sleep and watch, you know, college football or whatever. I hate to say it. I've been to a lot of cities, so I've done the tourist thing. And during the regular season, I don't need to do it. I don't know how many more times I can, you know, walk Bourbon Street or, you know, name. I mean, there's not a stadium I haven't visited other than the new ones like the Rams, which I'll check off the box this year. I like to sightsee. I mean, if I have time, if it's a Saturday, you know, we went to L.A., I think, last year or the year before. And, you know, we found our way out to the beach, you know, and out to that mess out there. But
you may have a lot more time on Sundays this year. You got a lot more night games and stuff.
We got a
like
lot
that,
of night
so
games,
you
yeah.
Your days to fill.
Yeah. And the way I will fill that is by watching football. I'll turn on the TV at 10 a.m. and the games will come on at 1 Eastern and I'll sit there and watch them.
I think baseball and hockey and basketball are a little different because you can go to cities for a couple days.
You're there for 4 days. So
you get off days sometimes on the road.
Right.
You know, so
it's great.
You know, you've got different things there. Games are generally at night.
And you're not playing most of the time till the next night. So you have like, you know, 12 hours. So, yeah.
So, yeah, I think the players are, and probably the writers and people and broadcasters who cover the teams are, it's a little different based on the sport and how long you're in a city or how the road trip goes and that. Because, you know, baseball, you can go on a 10-day road trip sometimes, and you may have an off day or two on the road. And so, and it depends on the city, what you might do. And
we're in and out. And when I covered the Rays this one time for Mark Tompkin, the most weirdest, sort of strangely glorious thing was knowing I was going to be in Baltimore for 4 days. And when I got to my hotel room, I said, you know what? I can take stuff out of this suitcase and put it in a drawer, and it'll be here when I get home from the ballpark at 2 a.m. And that's what I did. So
when I did baseball, this is 15 years ago, doing the Braves and traveling. You know, when we went to D.C., we did the touristy stuff. We went to Arlington. We went to some of the museums and and some of that stuff. Philadelphia, we did some of the, you know, in Boston as well, we did some of the tourist stuff from, you know, American history back in, you know, 1700s and that. Other cities, you might just, you know, hang out and go to a bar or restaurants or whatever else. It kind of depended on where you were at and the game situation and when you were leaving, you know, when you were leaving next. And, you know, it was a lot of things factored into what you did. But
yeah, for us, usually dinner is involved. I mean, I will say that off the top. And there's usually myself back in the day. It was Tom Jones, maybe Greg Ulm. And I mean, we will find a nice place to eat. And, you know, we won't try to like, but we will have not eaten breakfast. You know, depends on when you land, all that stuff. And we'll usually go out and have a nice dinner. And I like sampling, you know, sort of what the culture of the city is too. You know, other people are in there. What's going on? Is it a holiday? Is it Halloween? I've been on the road many, many Halloweens before.
You will be this year.
It will be again. Yeah.
In New Orleans.
And the weirdest thing is to go out and realize you're the guy without the crazy mask. Like you're the only one that's not wearing one of these damn masks. And so you're kind of leaning over going, hey, you got anything for me? Like a junkie. Hey, can I have some lipstick or can I have some face paint? Like, what do you got? give me that. How much for that Navy hat? You know, like, I need something. And if people will ridicule you, it's like, hey, man, what's wrong with you? You're not dressed up for Halloween. It's like, I'm just here to have dinner. Yeah, right. So there's that. But good questions. Really good. Kind of all over the place tonight. I like it. So thanks for your questions, as always. We hope that you have a great Memorial Day. We will be back to talk to you about the Lightning against Carolina in Game 1 of their series on Monday. So for Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.